Welcome to another episode of the Cook, Eat, Nourish podcast with me, Fiona Staunton of Fiona's Food for Life. Today I'm talking with Kate MacDade of NutriKate. Kate is a health performance nutritionist and founder of NutriKate, a high-performance nutrition consultancy. Kate studied food science at UCD before completing an MSc in sport and exercise nutrition. We talk about there's a lot to get right before we're looking at supplements. So we do touch on different supplements, but we're looking at perhaps as parents, how we can support those teenagers that are going through very active years where they're looking to perform well in their sports. But we also want them to grow into healthy, balanced adults. So make sure you listen to the end to find her three top tips. And as usual, all the links are in the show notes below. I'd love if you would rate and review and share this podcast. It helps others find us. I hope you enjoy the show. So welcome to my podcast. Today we have Kate MacDade. Would you like to introduce yourself to my audience, Kate?
Absolutely. Well, firstly, thank you so much, Fiona, for the invite. I'm delighted to be here having the chats and hopefully shedding some light to your audience today. But I'm a health and performance nutritionist. I run a consultancy here in Dublin called NutriKate, where I suppose my team and I work with individuals. We work with different teams and organizations and different sports scholarships programs. And we also deliver seminars and workshops to the corporate world. So it's a bit of a mixed bag. I suppose some of the clients that we'd work with would include the likes of Dublin and Kildare GAA, Trinity and their sporting scholarships. We're working with the Paddy Harrington golfing scholarship in Maynooth University. So I suppose that'll give you an idea of maybe who we see from the sporting world. And then we have an array of our corporate clients too. And as I said, a mixed bag with one-to-ones.
Fantastic. And as I understand, you're now retired, but high performance athlete yourself. Do you want to give us a little bit of info there?
Yeah, so I suppose my and actually where my love for nutrition, I suppose, stemmed was, I suppose, taking it back to my younger days. I would have played basketball quite competitively, playing for Ireland and Dublin. And I suppose that's where I got exposed to maybe working with nutritionists or the importance of nutrition to try and help me, I suppose, get the most from my performance. And then I suppose the competitiveness in me hasn't left, but definitely as I kind of got a little bit older and in more recent years, I tried my hand at Gaelic football. I was doing a lot of work in it at the time. And then last year I was fortunate enough to play for Dublin, the Dublin senior football team as well there, after working with them actually for a number of years as their nutritionist. And actually those girls being probably my inspiration to go into Gaelic football in the first place, as well as maybe my family, my brother in particular, would be heavily involved. So it's like something that I grew up in but just never really did, bar maybe primary school and helping a team out maybe over one summer there. I think when I was 18, I literally think I just arrived up and was trying to see what was going on, but it was very short-lived. But joined Chemical Croaks there probably about 4 years ago, and it was just something to keep me fit in the off-season for basketball, and one thing led to another. And as I said, I was out in Croke Park last year, so and do Parnell Park, so it was a great experience, amazing. But running my own business and everything is kind of all took its toll on me. So I had to kind of make a decision there as to, you know, where I had to place my priorities. I guess I'm taking on now myself, and, you know, I can't keep trying to chase this sporting goal if I'm chasing X, Y, and Z from a business and professional standpoint too. So.
Okay. Fantastic. Exciting. Exciting non-stop career there from the sounds of it. Okay, so there's two areas, and both related, that I'd love to talk about today, Kate, if that's possible. So a lot of my clients and people that I would work with are cooking for teenagers or preteens, etc. And a lot of the time, particularly, so I'm a mother of a teenage boy, a lot of the time it comes up about the protein, the amount of protein that they need for this sport or that sport, etc. And then we also have, unfortunately, the drop-off rate with a lot of girls when it comes to sport and secondary school. So maybe what we could do is we could talk about the two different areas, and I'll come up with a few questions as we go through each of those. Just the people, parents listening to this, or even teens listening to my podcast. I'm not too sure how many do, but it's usually an older age group. So that they could be educated in things to watch out for and support with their teenagers. So let's do ladies first. Would you like to talk about some particular areas of consideration when we're talking about the teenage athletes, female athletes?
Yeah, I suppose there's a few things, and actually some of it can cross over into the male side of things, but definitely from, like, one thing that's kind of universal when it comes to female and male athletes, particularly underage, we need to think that they are unique in that, well, to adults who've stopped growing, who stopped developing, I suppose, in terms of, you know, organs and so on. These are individuals, you know, when they're underage, that have all that growing and that developing to do. And that requires energy in and of itself. Particularly maybe in the earlier years, and maybe, I suppose, boys more so than females. But even, you know, away from any of the training that they might be doing, they might be very active, say, at lunchtime, or, you know, running around the yard, maybe playing football at break time, or they've got PE lessons and so on. So again, another maybe energy cost, or a place where energy is being is required, and more so than maybe you or I, who might get out for a walk for half an hour here, there, or wherever it might be. It's very different, obviously, playing a game of football and whatnot. So there may be considerations that we need to take into account from an energy standpoint. And then we look at, you know, the likes of, for females in particular, the energy cost of something like their menstrual cycle. So obviously, you know, most females will have their period by the age of 15. That requires about 30,000 calories over the year for that to operate and for that to function. So when we've got young females, and, you know, similar to males in that, these athletes are usually being pulled between multiple sports. So it's not just usually one sport or one team, particularly if they're, you know, gifted on an athletic standpoint. A few teams want a piece of them. A few sports want a piece of them. And, you know, and I'm sure, as you mentioned, parents are listening to this, like, you guys are taxi central going from A, B, C and everywhere else. So there's a lot going on, but one key indicator, if, you know, particularly the female athlete isn't getting enough energy on board to support what she might be doing on a pitch or in a swimming pool or whatever it might be, as well as all her kind of natural biological and physiological needs, and indeed mental needs, we'll see that the menstrual cycle can start to be disturbed. So all of a sudden now there's not a regular cycle there. It's happening every couple of months, or it ceases altogether. So in that context, for the female athlete, like, that is something really worth being mindful of, whether you're a parent or indeed a female athlete listening into this, is that your body's way of going, hold on a second here, like, I am under phenomenal stress here. I can't support everything that you need me to support from a health standpoint, from a athletic standpoint. So basically what our body does there is it starts to prioritize the energy it does have, and where that energy goes. So, okay, she wants to knock around the football pitch here and, you know, do repeated sprints, get a knock, jump, whatever might be going on. I'm going to make sure the energy is there to do that. But then it has to, I suppose, that means then that something else has to give. So in this case, it can be the menstrual cycle that is taxing, but I suppose the body's looking at it, you know, what in need immediately. It's not maybe supporting fertility or bone health or even mood or overall well-being. It's okay, making sure she can keep doing what she wants to do here. So I think if there's any disruptions or disturbances with a menstrual cycle, that's a big red flag, and that should be addressed. And I suppose when I was growing up, It wasn't really spoken about. If it was spoken about, it was kind of part and parcel. Okay, well, when training gets really intense and there's a large block of it, it's just normal. That's just one of these things that happened and whatever, who cares? But thankfully, we're more educated now and we know. The other side then, or another maybe key micronutrient that would be worth considering is iron in relation to the menstrual cycle. You know, a regular teenage girl who has a consistent menstrual cycle, she's losing blood. So we want to make sure that there's adequate amounts of iron in her diet. So that's probably a key importance. Calcium is really important for bone health, and that actually will scale across for both males and females, because they're growing, they're developing, you know, there's a requirement there as their skeleton grows and whatnot, and that it has enough calcium. And then a key one that again crosses over for the males as well will be vitamin D, and that's, I suppose, a nutrient that we predominantly get from the sun, so it's quite you know, be quite prevalent that there's maybe a bit of a deficiency there, particularly in the winter months when we might see a little bit of sun if we're lucky, but the way it's rotated, we actually don't get the same benefit as what we would get say over the summer months, so perhaps a vitamin D supplement actually could be useful even in that kind of younger population to support things like their bone health, their overall well-being as well.
If I were to go back to the female teenage athlete there that we'll be speaking about, and say, for example, so you mentioned their period stop. If their period stopped, that would be a red flag. Is it the GP that you would suggest that they would go to with that, or is it more specialist, or what would you, in your experience, what would that be?
Yeah, I think you know, you want to get someone who's qualified. So there'd be, you know, nutritionists, there's dietitians that work specifically instances like that. But I suppose, as you mentioned there, going to the GP would probably be the first protocol so that you can rule out maybe any underlying issues that might be there. So if there's like a history of maybe irregularities there or anything like that, the GP can at least rule that out with different blood tests and so on. And then next protocol, when you're sure that it's nothing maybe further than, you know, maybe the inadequate amount of energy intake, well, then that's when you'd look for your dietitian or your nutritionist that would be appropriate to work with the athlete at hand.
And that's the type of service that you would offer, I'm presuming. Yes.
Yeah, okay. We work with individuals like that, yeah.
And just as a question, it's not food related, but imagine the teenager was on some type of pill that they weren't getting periods anyway. What would happen there?
That's a really good point to raise, and I'm delighted that you did, actually. So the key thing there with one thing as well that actually might just be no harm to say as well, some GPs, if you are an individual who has irregular periods, or your daughter is in that boat, some prescriptions out there will go, okay, well, we'll just put you on the pill so you've got a regular period. But actually, that when you're on the pill, yes, you might be, you know, on a 21-day cycle and you might get bleeding then for that 7 days, essentially, where you're off the pill. But that's a withdrawal bleed. That's, you're not menstruating. So I think that's really important, because what can happen there is, you know, someone might think, okay, everything's A-OK because I'm getting my periods, you know, with inverted commas there. So happy days. So the pill can actually mask inadequate energy intake. So that's, you know, there's loads of benefits to the pill. So sorry, I want to get that clear. Like, there's loads of reasons why someone might go on the pill. There's loads of benefits to it, depending on the situation. But in terms of, you know, trying to rectify a period that's kind of all over the shop, that's not the solution. So I would definitely kind of be cautious of that if that's the prescription that's thrown your way with kind of any, no other information going along with that.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so we've mentioned that side of things about the, you know, the energy that you were talking about, and watching out for the girls in particular for a change in the menstrual cycle. protein gets mentioned a lot. And I know from the food side of things, when cheese was being made, the whey was drained off and the whey was thrown away, and that was it. It wasn't used. And then all of a sudden, over the last, what, 15 years maybe, it's become a more valuable product, and there's jars of protein in lots of people's houses. And I know, so it's something that we didn't grow up with. Obviously, you're used to working with athletes, and, you know, supplementation like that might be common practice. But for the individual teenage, be it a boy or a girl, having protein shakes, maybe having that instead of a meal, or the things they should watch out for from a parent's point of view, is there a really good quality or a poor quality, or could you give us, I know it's a really tough ask in a mm-hmm. couple of minutes, but could you maybe just give us the headlines on protein and protein supplements mainly?
Yeah, so I think just one thing that you mentioned there about, you know, maybe using it instead of a meal, or that be a good use for it. Like, you know, if we are using something like a protein supplement, like, it's to complement what you're doing, and really going back to maybe the prevalence of underfueling in young athletes, particularly in athletes who are extremely competitive. So, you know, as I mentioned, that person who's pulled between sports is training every day, or they're two, maybe training multiple times a day, you know, that it's really, really important that they're getting energy on board, and having a protein shake instead of a meal isn't going to help that cause. So that's maybe something to kind of get clear. In terms of protein, so whey protein in this instance, because you can have a casein supplement too, but whey protein is a high quality protein source, and it can be beneficial. But really what we'd be looking to do, and I suppose our kind of approach is always food first. So while whey protein is a high quality protein source, we can get maybe more nutrients by going down the route of picking out maybe other high quality protein sources, but that are a food alternative. So that would be always the preference. And you've got your eggs, you've got your chicken, you've got your, you know, lentils, chickpeas. There's plenty of options from a plant-based scenario if that's, you know, relative to, or relevant to you. You've got your lean meat, your oily fish. Like, there's plenty of options out there. So that's kind of what we want to try and push, because there's more bang for buck from a nutrient standpoint. So first and foremost, taking that in mind, whey isn't a necessity, but where it can be useful, even in kind of the underage athletes, is if they're extremely picky, or because their kind of schedule is jam-packed, you know, something like a whey through maybe different snacks that they might make at home, and so on, or, you know, even in case of maybe adding it to their porridge, that can be super useful. But again, before you ever get to that point, you could also add something like a Greek yogurt into a banana bread. You could add it to a smoothie. You can add an Icelandic yogurt as well into something like your porridge. So it's very much based on the athlete and the individual. I don't think, you know, it's important that they meet their protein needs, which, you know, breakfast in particular is an area very often for actually most people, but definitely younger athletes, where they might struggle to get in protein, because they usually opt for a bowl of cereal, which is, you know, a carbohydrate source, which they'll also need to complement performance. But we want to, you know, get a little bit more protein on board too. So that's where, you know, your eggs or your yogurt, milk will help the cause there too. But yeah, that's maybe where it might add a few more options. So I suppose to surmise that it is a high quality source. It can be used, but food first ideally would be the approach, and it's context driven as to where it is included and where it's not. And I think if you are going to supplement or go down that road, it's really important that you go with a reputable source. So I would work closely with Connecticut Sports. All their products are batch tested, so it minimizes the risk of any cross contamination. It minimizes the risk of anything being there that it shouldn't. So I would feel confident passing that on to my athletes. And one way, I suppose, if you're really looking for quality as well, and maybe other alternatives, is you can use a website called informsport.com. If you Google informsport, it comes up.
I'll put it in the show notes below. So yeah.
Brilliant. So that would be, you know, particularly for competitive athletes, but I think from a quality standpoint, they don't go too far wrong. So they'd all the supplements listed there would fall in line with WADA regulations. So in terms of anti-doping and everything else. So again, just going back to quality, and I suppose the more competitive your child might be, or indeed an athlete listening, even more relevant this all becomes. But that can be a really useful tool, and you can just type in different brands or different names of products, and it'll come up if they're on the list, or nothing will come up obviously if they're not there either.
And so, I mean, I just mentioned whey as an example because from my whole food type of thing, but there's other protein sources to make the protein powders, is that correct?
There's another type of protein powder that you can get, which would be, instead of whey, it would be casein, which would be the other protein found in milk and the like. So that digests more slowly. I personally have never really used it with any of my athletes. It generally can be used maybe as a pre-bed high protein snack because of this kind of slow rate of digestion. So essentially we drip feeding protein over the course of the evening or the course of the night, or while the athlete is sleeping. So it's definitely another option, but I normally just tend to, you know, maybe add a bit of whey to some yogurt, or just have a high protein yogurt or whatnot. And that would be kind of the recommendation I normally go with on that front.
Okay. Thank you. So that's our protein. Next one, can I ask you about creatine?
Yeah.
So you might first of all explain what the, because some people mightn't know, but in terms of what the creatine, why they might be taking it, and any, is it perfectly safe? Is there any dangers, or are there any things to be watched out for if people are self prescribing, I suppose?
Yeah. So creatine is actually the most well-researched supplement out there. It is one of the few supplements that actually do what they say they will do, in that it is used to, I suppose, support repeated sprint performance. It can support recovery. It can aid strength performance in the likes of the gym. There's more research coming out now that it may support cognitive function, and even some interesting work coming around in terms of overall brain health and everything else. It can be used as well. And again, emerging research would suggest that it can be used in terms of aiding recovery from the likes of concussion and so on. So it is extremely well researched in adults. So that's the key thing there. And there's very few studies done on like the kind of youth that youth kind of population. And again, like really, like supplements are the last piece of the puzzle. And like the athletes that I deal with that are underage, like energy intake is usually off. They're usually under hitting the mark there. The quality of their diet can be off. That's not to say that there's no foods that aren't overly nutritious, or, you know, junk foods allowed or anything like that. Because at the end of the day, they are kids. And then the other side of the coin, like they're people and food is there to be enjoyed, so they don't need to get the boat either. But we just want to be in a area where their framework is supporting their needs and providing them with the nutrients that need, and then they can, you know, include what they like thereafter, essentially. But energy intake, overall quality, things like fruits and veggies, hydration, sleep, recovery, and so on, like these are all areas that usually young athletes aren't getting right, and getting them right will add far more benefit than any supplement will do when everything else is kind of a little bit all over the shop or inconsistent. So I think, you know, there's a lot to look at before something like creatine is ever even considered. But certainly as they get into maybe, you know, senior level, and they become adults, and again, provided that they're ticking the box on all those areas, like nutrient timing is another one, effective fueling strategies. Like these are things that I deal with, you know, adults on a day-to-day basis. So it's, yes, you want to get kids very comfortable with this idea, or younger athletes comfortable with these ideas, and I suppose chipping away at them, but very often they won't have everything sewn up. So that's what we want to focus on first. That's where they're going to get the bang for buck. And then it's looking at these supplements. But definitely from a a research standpoint, it's very, the more work needs to be done essentially to say if there's any long-term effects, say if there's any damage, or not damage, but any maybe negatives from a younger person supplementing with something like creatine. And then I suppose the other side of it is, there can be different, pathways used by younger athletes as they're maturing. So, you know, that might be something that might have an impact even on the effectiveness of something like creatine. So, so there's a lot there. So really, to be honest, like if, you know, in the context of underage athletes, it's probably not any big driver that would push me to that way. But certainly, you know, when we're looking at senior players or older adults, there can be, you know, a good bit of benefit in creatine supplementation.
Where does creatine come from naturally?
So you'll get creatine in animal products by and large. So we'll actually get it from food, but because creatine is something, so it's an energy, it's a source of energy essentially. So we'll get it from food, but because it's constantly in a state of turnover, we don't get enough from our food to saturate the muscle, which is what we're looking to do to help provide us with this energy source when we're doing those short bursts of sprints, for example, if we take like a rugby player or a GAA player, for example. I can't think of the number now, which is so annoying, but it's something crazy. Oh, that's going to rack my head now, Fiona. Sorry, I can't think of the appropriate number, but it's a 5 kilos of lean.
Well, look, if you come back with the number and you want to email me, I can edit it into the show notes. So that's if you do come up with it. So that's not a problem. Okay. But if the, so say for example, your child has been, because I can get them on the internet, it's very easy to access all of these things now, and they're taking the creatine. Is there anything that you would need to watch out for, or do you think they should go and see a professional about it first of all to make sure? Because as you say, there isn't the studies to see if there is any longer term damage, or is it, you know, if they're happy and healthy and performing, keep going?
Yeah, so I think like I just feel like, just from what I've seen, I just feel like supplements are maybe more exciting, and that's why they're appealing to younger athletes, even older, people, you know, of an older kind of age. You know, if purchasing something and then adding that in, it's easy as well. Do you know the kind of way we can all throw in X, Y, and Z? So I just feel like I think it's always good to kind of get a professional opinion on these things, because there literally could be something so obvious that you might be underestimating or maybe not maximizing. You know, even carbohydrate intake is all over the shop in terms of people not meeting their needs. Like, but that is going to be such a key element in terms of supporting performance. So I think, you know, you want to make sure that everything is fleshed out before we start looking at creatine and so on. And because, you know, the research can be lacking, like there is a way, well, if they're happy and healthy, like whatever, but I suppose if you're serious about your performance and capitalizing and maximizing your own potential, well, then I think it's always worth making that investment in the context of getting professional advice on that front. Because then, you know, you've done everything to get to where you want to get to, particularly in the context of those of us maybe competing at high levels. So I definitely think it's worth kind of fleshing out, making sure you're doing all the basic, but the important stuff consistently right.
Okay, so going back to those bits, because you were saying at that age, pulled in different areas, they have a lot more, and they're growing, they have a lot more energy needs. How would you look at the energy that a person needs, or look at what they're taking in? Like, do you suggest counting the macros, or do you count, you know, what way would you suggest would be a healthy way to go through those teen years with keeping up your sports?
Yeah. So definitely in the teenage years, like counting macros, counting calories and so on can be a useful support option for adults and different things. But I think, you know, you're probably too impressionable to start looking that closely at X, Y, and Z. I think there's ways, you know, definitely that we would look to deliver the same message essentially, but like without focusing on numbers and so on. I think a key thing with young athletes, teenagers, is like educating, making them aware of why X, Y, and Z is important. What's it going to do? And I think the key thing there is they care about their performance. They don't care about their health necessarily at this point. Like, it just, all people need to think about the health is that was kind of the mindset that you're in. You know, you just, I'm young, I don't need to worry about that stuff, and it doesn't really enter your radar. But someone who enjoys the sport, wants to get longevity out of their career, who wants to minimize the risk of injury, who wants to be essentially the best that they can be, whether that's, you know, being on even a social team with their friends, they love it because they're there with the friends, are having the crack, and you know, they enjoy playing it, to the more elite end where they're trying to make county panels, international teams, and so on. I think educating them on what their needs are, why they are looking to implement X, Y, and Z, and so on, can really make a difference, and tying it back to the performance element. So, you know, being hydrated before you go to training will help you think better, will help you make better decisions, will make training feel easier, for example, and so on. So it's like trying to reference back to what they do care about, which is performance, and not getting sick so that they can still train with their friends, and so on and so forth. So
if we were taking, say, hydration as an example, then, mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about a 16-year-old, say, what volume are we talking about? Or how is there an easy hack, like taking it first thing in the morning, or making sure you finish your bottle before the what would you suggest in terms of hydration as an overall? I know everyone's individual, but as a general active teenager.
So I think actually the easiest one, and you know, you and your listeners will be familiar with this, is that urine chart that you've probably seen in a clubhouse, that you've seen up in a dressing room wall, that scale where it shows the different colors that your urine might be, and what that means, whether you're overhydrated, whether you're adequately hydrated, excuse me, or dehydrated. So I think, like, fair enough, you know, your teenager might wake up and their urine's quite dark, but it's really just like educating them that as the day goes on, that we want to get towards a pale yellow color. So we all go to the bathroom. We go to the bathroom multiple times per day. You can easily take a look to see what's going on. And then they know straight away, like, God, I'm off the mark here, or I'm not. And, you know, speaking of teenagers, like, they're in, some people might be doing their leave insert now, for example. So hydration from a focus and concentration standpoint is super important in the academia side of things as well, and helping them get the most there. And I suppose with active teenagers, they're kind of pushed for time. So they're going from school to training to maybe another training session, or they're playing matches at the weekend and so on. So if they can be a little bit more efficient or effective in class, and not in a point where they're like, oh my God, just zoning out and trying to, you know, stay awake. But, you know, if they can be a bit more tuned in, you know, more times than not, well, then homework's going to be easier. They'll retain more information and so on. So I think the urine chart is really useful. Another way, like, you won't be able to see it in my bottle, and obviously your listeners won't be able to see my bottle anyway, but I've got cordial in my water, and it tastes nicer, so I'm more inclined to drink it. So things like that can be really useful as well, to try and encourage your teenager to stay on top of fluid. And one thing that I say when I'm working with younger teams and athletes is, like, part of my job is to go in with some senior teams that I work with and test their urine before they go out to train, because a manager is like, if they're dehydrated, they're not going to retain the information we want them to retain. They're not going to train as effectively as they should. They're more inclined to pick up an injury. If it's in a game scenario, they're more inclined to maybe do something stupid, and will that result in like a card or whatever it might be? So it's getting across the message maybe in a language that they resonate with, or that, you know, speaks to them, other than this is what you should be doing.
Yeah, no, I love that. So yeah, and the Euron chart makes it quite quite accessible for people just to have a look, as you say, when they go to the loo. What is a good drink for hydration, and what is one that might actually what's the word I'm looking for? But you know, like a coffee isn't it? Dehydrate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't think of the words.
No, fair. It is Friday. It's Friday, so I say our brain cells are hanging in there. But I'll just start on coffee. So caffeine is in the likes of tea, coffee, that is a diuretic. So very often people would associate that with maybe having a dehydrating effect. But in the likes of something like a mug or tea or a mug of coffee, yes, there's caffeine, which is a diuretic, but also you've got all this water in that cup as well. So there's actually a net hydrating effect there. So that it does contribute. So hopefully that's good news of a Friday for everyone listening. So that actually can help. I suppose the only thing that won't help would be like an espresso, where there's obviously very little fluid. But most things, you know, that have a high water content will actually contribute. Even the likes of your fruits and vegetables, like peppers, citrus fruits and so on, like that all have a high water content, they'll help the cause too. Alcohol obviously won't help the cause, that is, you know, going to cause a dehydrating effect.
Like, you know, the energy drinks or Coke or those type of things, are they similar, you're saying, to the coffee, in that because it's got a large water volume, it's kind of net out?
Yeah, so they will contribute to fluid intake. I think a key thing with energy drinks, do you mean in the likes of the Red Bulls, or do you mean Lucid?
Yes. The Red Bulls, similar.
Red Bull and Monster and so on, they will contribute to fluid intake as well. In the context of teenage athletes, like obviously they've got a high, depending on the options that they go for, because there's a lot of zero options out there in terms of like carbohydrates and sugar and so on, but depending on the option that they go for, you know, they are adding in a whole load of energy from the carbohydrates that are present, but more so the caffeine that they're taking on board, which again, caffeine is actually a useful supplement in the context of performance, but again, at that age, it's not relevant. If a teenager is depending on caffeine to perform, there is something gone drastically wrong with what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. If they're also consuming that caffeine late into the afternoon, that's going to have a negative impact on their sleep. Sleep effects will have an influence on their recovery, their capacity to think, their memory. It's going to, obviously, if they're not getting high quality sleep, they're going to wake up tired, and then they kind of fall into that cycle no more than an adult does, you know, the kind of way. So that definitely is something, like energy drinks, I wouldn't recommend them. I don't really recommend them in general, but certainly for teenagers, you know, that's something that should be, I suppose, flagged and considered, and, you know, maybe rethought if it's part of the day to day or week to week. Something though, like a Lucozade Sport, which would be like a sports drink on the other side, that actually can be really beneficial in the context of, you know, heavy training volume or long training sessions or games, because it provides carbohydrates to aid from an energy standpoint. And definitely younger athletes actually rely on that kind of exogenous carbohydrate intake to support their performance. And it also helps from a hydration standpoint, because obviously it's a high fluid content, but it also contains electrolytes, which they'll lose through through sweat and so on. So again, it can be beneficial in the context of like a game or a heavy training session that's kind of going beyond the hour mark and so on. It's not a necessity, mind you, but again, it's context driven and can be useful, which I know sometimes parents are a little bit like, and even clubs, they have like a no sports drink policy in some cases. But if we're looking at a performance standpoint and what can actually help, again, it's context driven. It'll come down to the child and their goals, or the teenager and their goals and so on. and where they are at, like how far on the scale of teenager that they are, as well, will have an influence on it. So it's another consideration maybe to take on board.
Okay, so that's our hydration done quite in depth. Thank you. If we move on to the sleep then, how would you, I know the different rhythm of a teenager in the house, but you have mentioned a few times about the importance of sleep on performance and getting those things down pat before you're looking at supplements and things. What tips could you give us around that, or what flags might you raise around that?
Yeah, so I think, sleep, if we're looking at it in the context of like an athletic standpoint, athletes who get less than 8 hours of sleep versus the athlete who gets 8 hours or more, they're 1.7 times more likely to pick up an injury. So it's really useful in the context of injury prevention. It's super important in terms of their overall recovery and their mood. It's going to have an impact on, again, athletes in team sports or any athlete. Like, there's adversities that you are going to experience. So the better of a headspace that we're in, the easier it is maybe to see the positives in the kind of difficult times, when you're trying to, perform well and things aren't going your way. Like, it's easy maybe to kind of get your head to a point where you can focus on what is within your control and how you can still continue to be a team player and how you can still to continue to perform. Whereas that's more difficult, obviously, if you're starting from maybe a low bank or a lower kind of mood point. So
was that percentage case, was that if you've less than 8 hours sleep, you've 1.5% more likely to get to pick up an injury? Was that what you said?
You're 1.7 times more likely.
Oh, times. OK, yeah.
Yeah. To pick up an injury than if you were getting 8 or more hours sleep. I think obviously things like we alluded to caffeine and how that can have a negative impact on sleep. So caffeine actually has a half-life of 12 hours in a lot of cases. So that means that half the amount of caffeine that you consumed is still circulating in your system 12 hours after you've consumed that. So very often athletes go, yeah, I'll have a cup of tea and I conk straight out. So if it's not affecting how quickly you get to sleep, it can affect the quality of that sleep. So you're more aroused, essentially. And the same is true for, screens before bed. Like, ideally, we're not looking at any screen an hour before bed. I know a lot of teenagers are probably going to bed. I'm saying teenagers, like, it's realistically most of us are going to bed. It's not just a teenage problem. But most of us are going to bed with a phone or a laptop, or we've got Netflix on to try and help us sleep, when actually that's emitting a blue light that has an impact on our sleep-wake cycle and the release of melatonin, which is an important hormone that regulates that cycle and essentially helps us know that it's time to go to bed. So those lights are kind of disrupting that, and in turn, we're more aroused. The quality of sleep can be compromised there too. So I said, knocking lights on their head about an hour before bed. But again, being realistic, and something that I'd probably recommend to younger athletes when I'm discussing this is even start with like 30 minutes before bed. Try to cut out those electronics. It's not quite the hour, but it's still better than going to bed on your phone. So we'll take the little win. And that's where, in that last 30 minutes, instead of being on WhatsApp, Instagram, TikTok, whatever they're doing, that's a time maybe to get your bag ready for school the next day. Get your lunch organized, or if there's chores that you're supposed to do around the house, you can do them then. You can have your shower. I know, again, it'll be kind of hit and miss what teenagers do and what, but maybe a puzzle, read a book, something that removes them from that kind of need for a screen. And I think a key thing now, as we're going into the summer months where we don't have the structure of school anymore, is to try and maintain as much as is possible. And again, this goes similar to the diet. We're looking to have a solid framework. Is more times than not, we're going to bed at a similar time and waking up at a similar time. That also helps in terms of the quality of sleep as well.
So that wasn't going to be about my next question, is when they get those 8 hours. So in an ideal life, we're saying to get the 8 hours, but does it matter when they get it? Okay, so you've said their regular is ideal. Okay, so during the school term, they might try and lie in at weekends, but say during the summer, is it okay if they just go to bed at midnight and get up at eight, you know, is it, or they go to bed at one or two and get up later? Because it seems to me that teenagers, and from what I've read, they tend to be more nocturnal.
Yeah, I think like ideally, you know, I would normally tend to lean towards before kind of midnight, and, you know, whether they're sleeping 8, 9, up to 10 hours in some cases, and then, you know, getting up then, like that's kind of usually the pattern I would stick with, or, you know, expect maybe, because I think they can get the most benefit from that. So again, we're trying to work maybe as well with the cues, like external cues, which can be difficult now because the evenings are stretching on. But, you know, going to bed essentially when it's dark and getting up when it's nice and bright is usually a good kind of rule to abide by.
Yes. It's a challenge, but yes. Okay, thank you.
Yes.
So before I jump into my three top tips, as I always ask my guests to for people to improve their health, I just wanted to ask one quick other supplement that I wanted to touch on was the ashwagandha. So I know from the work that I do with menopause and a lot of the symptoms there, ashwagandha is in a lot of the supplements to help with the brain fog in particular. But I see it's also appearing for particularly, I'm noticing anyway, with male teenagers in terms of performance. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so actually when it comes to that particular supplement, there's some research that would tie it in, I suppose, with the likes of performance. It can help minimize stress, anxiety. There's some research tying it in with increasing testosterone. There's actually, on another note entirely, in terms of fertility, there's a link drawing it to that too, and improving that side of things. But really, a lot of the research still is quite inconclusive in those areas. So that's something that, and I think, I know maybe there's two options there. Yeah, there's two different supplements that again fall in line with batch testing and so on. But that's a supplement that I would never really recommend. And I only had an athlete there this week ask me about it because he's been taking it. And again, it's like something that I just never go with because it's not as concrete, and there is a risk with supplementation that even if it is batch tested, it doesn't negate the risk of contamination and so on. And when we get into the realm of drug testing and so on for sports at high levels, you know, that's where we can see like problems emerging if something comes up in that urine that shouldn't be there and can be maybe as a result of, you know, taking a supplement that had some sort of contamination or so on. So, you know, if I'm making a recommendation on supplementation, I want it to be super, you know, minimize the risk as much as possible and as concrete as possible. Because again, there's so many factors that we need to get right before we even get to that point. So, yeah, I just try and that's something that I would normally recommend from a performance standpoint.
Okay, thank you. So it's more the concern will be not so much with the actual product, but will be the cross-contamination. So it's not that ashwagandha itself could potentially cause issues if people were going for testing, or you're saying it may possibly be contamination that could produce something negative in a result.
That's not just specifically to ashwagandha, that's like any supplement. Okay. So that's why you want to be really sure, and that's more so obviously when athletes are in a position where they're going to be tested. But in terms of ashwagandha, like because the research is inconclusive from a performance standpoint, like I just don't bother with it essentially.
Okay, super. Thank you. Sorry. And I know it's different. It's different for everyone. But you've given us loads of tips and information today, Kate. Thank you. So would you mind just telling us your three top tips for people to do at the moment to help improve their health?
I think a key one, and it's not specific to nutrition, but it's like focusing on yourself and in the context of like paying attention to like, how am I feeling? Like, am I feeling good, bad, indifferent? Like, do I feel like I've got no energy the whole time? And actually start paying attention to, you know, what your body essentially is telling you, and, you know, moving then to try and tweak that as best you can. But focusing on yourself versus what you're seeing on social media, what you're seeing your friend doing or your other half or whatever it is, we're all different. We've got different needs. Things won't add up for us all the same. So I think, you know, focusing on yourself is really important, and it often gets lost because we want to go with the trend, or we've seen X, Y, and Z all over the place, so it must be the best thing. So I think, you know, easy wins then, you know, I think not being afraid of the basics, like get your fruit and veg on board, stay hydrated, choose nutrient-dense foods as often as you can. Like, to be healthy, to excel, you don't need everything to look perfect, but you're going to be the sum of what you're consistently doing. So what you're doing more times than not is going to influence how you're feeling, you know, the goals you might have at play and how you're performing. So I think focusing on the basics and not trying to overcomplicate things is really helpful. And then another one is, like, we've touched on sleep. I think, like, don't underestimate the power of that. Like, some people here might have newborns, and obviously, you know, you can't prioritize your sleep over their needs, unfortunately. No matter how exhausted you may feel, it's definitely tricky business. But, you know, trying to, in the context of just performance or health, like trying to capitalize on even the quality of the little bit of sleep that you are getting where you can is a good cause. But in general, if we can, you know, maximize the quality of our sleep and prioritize that, or and respect it really, because I think, you know, the culture, I think it is shifting, but there is still a bit of a culture of, like, you know, the harder you work or the less you sleep, like the better a person that you are, the more the more you care about what you're doing. And actually, I think it's so important to support your needs and make sure you're functioning at a good standard and supporting your health, because that's when you're really your most effective anyway. And that's a super hard lesson, and I have to learn.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. I think it is changing. But I love the way as well that you managed to get about three or four into point number two. So that's cool.
So, I cheated.
Number one, focus on yourself and how are you feeling. Number two are the easy wins, like the fruit and the veg, the hydration, the nutrient dense foods, and you're the sum of what you consistently do. And number three is don't sleep. Don't underestimate the sleep and the power of sleep, and focus on the quality.
Yeah.
Super. So thank you so much. So if people wanted to get in touch with you, where would they be able to find you, Kate?
Yeah, so you get us on our website, which is NutriKate.com, or I am most active probably on my Instagram account, which is NutriKate_com, and that's NutriKate.
Super. So thank you so much, Kate. I'm going to pop all of the links and everything in the show notes. And I know we've touched on loads of different things today, and I really appreciate your time. So thank you so much.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to today's podcast on Cook, Eat, Nourish with me, Fiona Staunton of Fiona's Food for Life. I'd really appreciate if you would subscribe, rate and review the podcast to help spread the word. And if you pop over to my website, fionasfoodforlife.ie, you'll find lots of recipes, videos, inspiration, and upcoming courses. Thanks a million.